acquire property for the establishment of working forests, directs the state forester to manage the properties acquired for long-term revenue to provide student assistance to persons attending institutions in the Oregon University System. It allows the state treasurer to issue working forest revenue bonds, establishes a working forest higher education fund, establishes a working forest revenue bond fund, establishes a working forest revenue bond administrative fund, and continuously appropriates monies to each of these departments.
And we'll start with Jim Paul. Jim, if you want to come on up, Department of Forestry. I must mention, too, the committee will be here shortly. A couple of our members are tied up with another committee matter. They will be here shortly. Representative Chuck Burley is here today. He's not a regular part of the committee, but we're very glad to have you here today. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Paul, whenever you're ready, just state your name and go ahead.
Okay, I'm Jim Paul, Assistant State Forester with the Oregon Department of Forestry. I oversee the Forest Management Division, which includes oversight of the management of state-owned forest lands. Good afternoon, Chair Avakian, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Before I start, I do need to mention, because of some of the technical issues that we uncovered recently related to funding mechanisms described in this bill, we would like to ask for the opportunity to work on the bill further and bring it back for additional hearing at a later time. With this in mind, I'll be focusing primarily on our support for the purpose and intent of this bill. Fundamentally, Senate Bill 98 is about providing the new authority to the Board of Forestry to acquire and manage working forests in order to generate revenue primarily for higher education scholarships and scholarships in the state of Oregon. There are really two fundamental, and there's another fundamental purpose of the bill, the first being to provide a more stable funding source for higher education in the future. The second fundamental purpose is to help to provide another tool to the state forester and Board of Forestry to help address recent changes in the economic and ownership patterns in private forest lands that have put some working forests at risk due to a number of factors. Those factors include the conversion of forest land to non-forest uses, reductions in the productive capacity of forests due to such reasons as unsustainable harvest levels in order to service debt, and also the purchase of forest lands by landowners with interests other than maintaining working forests. We can see this starting to play out, especially in eastern Oregon, through some ownership and harvesting statistics. For example, since the early 90s, approximately 1 million acres of forest land has changed ownership. And it's evident that some of that those ownership changes has resulted in some diminishment of working forests. And that plays out through some statistics on harvest decline that we've seen. Over that same period in eastern Oregon, we've seen a decline from harvest levels of about 800 million board feet a year to something less than about 400 million board feet a year. I'd like to point out that we do view this bill as a tool of last resort. In other words, where we're seeing some working forests that are at risk of conversion to non-forest use, where there isn't a private buyer available that has a long-term interest in forest management, those are the type of lands that we really see using this tool and applying this tool in the future. As I referred to earlier, we have identified some issues with the funding mechanisms described in this bill and the need for some modifications to ensure that those mechanisms are viable. And just to close, we would welcome any opportunity to work with others who have an interest or ideas that would help us improve the funding pieces of this bill. I thank you for your time and consideration, and would be pleased to answer any questions you might have.
Mm-hmm. Committee? Senator Bates?
Just to give you a little better picture of the intent of this bill, the type of land you're seeing that are going out of forest production, are they being purchased for homes? Are they being purchased for resort areas? What's actually happening out there?
Well, the types of one example is a recent phenomenon of a growing number of types of timber ownership that are categorized as timber investment management organizations or real estate investment trusts, where we're seeing ownership, when it changes hands, those categories of owners will sometimes look to what is called the higher and better use, where lands that cannot maintain a high enough rate of return to meet the expectations of those investors are being looked to or parsed out for non-forest land use, residential or resort, or that type of use.
Understood.
Representative Burley.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair, again for the opportunity to be here today. As many of you know, I, being a certified forester, these types of things are very near and dear to my heart. I guess just a few comments. You know, I've reviewed this bill. I've spoken with folks at the department as well as the state treasurer's office about this. And, you know, the conversion of the land use is a big issue, I feel, and it's particularly acute on the east side of the mountains, where we've seen now two very large timber land owners change hands. But my personal feeling is I'd rather see these lands remain in private ownership, if at all possible. But, you know, if we were to go down this road of public ownership, I think that what we need to see in this bill, and this is very similar to what State of Washington has, where DNR manages, I believe, 11 different types of trust lands. I think we need to create a trust that has very, very clear mandate language as to what the purpose is for owning and managing these lands. And secondly, we need to include a metric, such as a return on asset or some type of quantitative measurable figure, that if the management of those lands is not meeting up to that metric, then they should be disposed of.
Chair Vaki and members of the committee, as you may be, I'm sure you've noticed, the bill does make an attempt to do that. Of course, it's arguable if that is, if it does go far enough, but there is language in there that does talk about if the lands ever are not able to produce, to be managed as working forests, as this bill intends, it actually does compel the state forester to sell those lands and presumably purchase other, put the proceeds from that sale into the working forest account that could potentially be used to purchase lands that could be managed and continue to be managed as working forests.
Senator Atkinson.
Thank you. And we have also spoken with the department about this issue. Do you have any research, though, that would show how much money local governments would lose by taking these lands off of their property tax roll?
This bill does consider that issue, and in fact, in order to address that issue specifically, it does, as part of the revenue stream, part of the revenue stream that would come off of these lands would go towards paying property taxes, the equivalent property taxes that would be paid were it to stay in private lands. And for those revenues that are coming off of the lands to go towards higher education, the bill also has language that has 10% of those revenues go towards the local counties, I believe.
So you're going to harvest these lands? Is that what you mean by revenues?
These lands are, and the bill defines working forests, which is what this bill would give the authority for the state forester to purchase lands as working forests. And the working forests are defined as being managed primarily for timber production to produce revenue over the long term in concert with other forest values. So it is intended to maintain forest lands in wood production along with maintaining other forest values out there.
But wouldn't you agree, one last thing, that cutting a tree on state-owned land is a political argument that rarely happens in getting those revenues off for the higher ed fund? I mean, and if you look at the Tillamook and some of the other issues that we faced around here for the last 10 years about harvesting timber and receiving the revenue off for the common school fund or whatever, around here, it's always, when it becomes a political issue, harvest almost never happens. Am I wrong in that assessment?
Well, yeah, I guess, maybe to clarify, the state currently owns 780,000 acres of forest land, most of which is Board of Forestry-owned land, some of which is common school fund land. Some of those lands, about 35,000 acres of those lands, are in eastern Oregon, in Klamath County. Most of those lands are in a state forest called the Sun Passed Forest, and in fact, that forest has been managed as a working forest for a number of decades. And most recently, if you look at the five-year average of the management of that forest, it produces about $2 million a year of revenues, net revenues, that goes to either the counties or the Common School Fund, and about which is from about 9.5 million board feet of timber. So we are maintaining healthy working forests on state forest lands currently. The Tillamook, the Clatsop, the Elliott State Forest, and the Sun Pass are all examples of the history the department's had in doing so.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize I didn't get to you for the first part of your testimony, but I guess by my perspective, and I have a different idea of what a working forest essentially is, and when you're talking about a working forest, what size, if you're talking about, what's the name of the one in, around Bend from last session? I don't remember the name of that forest.
Skyline Forest.
What?
Skyline Forest.
Skyline Forest. But what is the zoning currently on that? I mean, what's the smallest parcel that could be broke up into?
I guess I don't know that. It depends on the county, the jurisdiction. Maybe you could clarify your question a bit.
Well, I guess let me clarify it. Not a specific forest, but in general, east side forest land isn't it 160 acre minimums that can be broken up into?
Chair Bakke and members of the committee, I'm not familiar with that statistic. Are you talking about minimum or maximum size in terms of clear cutting?
No, I'm talking about lot size. If a timber company owns a couple thousand, 10,000 acre block of forest land, what's the smallest size parcels they can divide that up into?
Yeah, I apologize. I don't know the answer to that, but I can try to find that out for you.
Well, I believe it's 160 acres. And from my perspective as a small woodland owner, I've only got one or two parcels that are bigger than that. To me, 160-acre blocks are forests. They're not subdivisions. And from my perspective, the state owns enough property now, and we don't need to have more of Oregon in public ownership. We need to keep more of it in private ownership. And if we want to talk about, doing something about around harvest plans or management plans in order to qualify for a house on 160 acres, I think that's a discussion we can have and should have, so that you keep a forest area, 160 acre blocks, even if it has a home in it, that only takes up an acre at the most, maybe more likely a half an acre. It seems more appropriate to talk about, in order to qualify for that house, you require management plans, require a harvest at some point in time. Then you keep the land and the tax rules, you keep them working for us, you keep the infrastructure, which in Central Oregon is already gone. There is virtually no wood products infrastructure left in Central Oregon. So to me, that's the approach we should be taking if we're going to talk about how these forests are converting. Because if they were profitable, timber companies would be buying them.
Senator Bates.
Thank you. Just a quick comment and a question. This week has been the next 5 years here, 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, discussing what the proper management forests are. And it goes all the way from people thinking that private lands are overcut, that federal lands are not cut, and that the state lands are somewhere in between. And I think maybe they're about right because everybody's mad at them. So I don't know. What intrigued me about this bill was I want to know if this would allow the state, if it chose to buy federal lands. And you can just about guess which lands I'm talking about. Would this bill allow that?
Chair Bakke and members of the committee, that is a good question. In the drafting of the bill, that was not a perspective that was sort of thought about. That this might be applied to, so I think we would have to do some more looking at the bill and thinking about that. I guess I don't have an answer to that question.
Thank you anyway. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
If the situation arises where you purchase the land and, as you described earlier, it's not profitable, or for some other triggering reason you're going to sell the land, are there any parameters around who you can sell the land to or for what purpose it's going to be used for as you pass it on?
Currently in the bill, I believe there is not.
Okay, Mr. Paul, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jay Ward? And just because the room has become a little more crowded, Mr. Ward is the last person I had signed up on the list, but is there anybody else who wanted to testify on Senate Bill 98? I have one taker. I guess everybody else here has wood stoves. Is that right? All right. Mr. Ward, go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and Representative Burley. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on Senate Bill 98. For the record, my name is Jay Ward. I represent Oregon Wild, a nonprofit charitable organization that's been working to protect Oregon's wildlife, wildlands, and waters for future generations. Senate Bill 98 comes before you with three explicit objectives, which appear relatively benign when you first take a look at them. It purports to maintain Oregon's forested lands as, quote, working forests, unquote, and ostensibly to stave off their development as housing or other commercial enterprises. Secondly, it would establish separate revenue accounts to provide for higher education and forest management funding. And thirdly, would create bonding mechanisms to allow the state and its assignees to acquire forests. If the bill's effects were limited to the first goal, that is, staving off development of forest land, I think you would find that conservation groups, including Oregon Wild, would find a way to support the bill. Regrettably, as it's now drafted, it falls somewhat short of that, and its premise flies in the face of history. We believe, as drafted in its current form, 98 would set Oregonians up for future struggles over education funding and forest management. And for myself, anyway, I've had enough of those struggles. For decades, Oregon's public education system was overly dependent upon harvest taxes and revenues from timber. Whether it was tax revenues from state lands, such as the Tillamook and the Elliott, or the revenues generated by federal forests managed by the Forest Service and BLM. Timber harvests have been a fickle source of income for Oregon students. In fact, during the years in which timber harvests were highest, much of Oregon's public education system was funded by a safety net passed by then Governor Goldschmidt. When federal court decisions protecting wildlife and water quality put an end to decades of overcutting, harvest-generated revenues collapsed. To his credit, then Senator Hatfield led the rest of the delegation in passing legislation funding rural schools and roads with direct disbursements from the federal treasury. This decoupling of timber harvest and education funding has been good for Oregon, good for rural schools, good for forest ecosystems, and good for the Oregonians who have been brought to the table under the authorities that the county payments legislation enabled. While this year's funding is currently in question, its passage is supported by rural counties, conservationists, labor unions, and the entire congressional delegation. This kind of consensus would not be possible if the bill recoupled harvest and rural school funding. Senate Bill 98, as it's currently drafted, would create just such an arrangement and, I believe, lead to future controversy and conflict. Oregonians expect a great deal from their public forest, a great deal more than wood products and harvest revenues. Indeed, the entire premise of this bill, that forests destined for the sawmill are the only definition of working forest, is flawed. All forests are working forests. They work to sequester carbon, produce oxygen, filter drinking water, support recreation, and attract visitors to Oregon. I spent the weekend in Utah, where their Governor Huntsman just backed off his plans to open up Utah's roadless forest to commercial logging because the Outdoor Industry Association pointed out to him that their industry and the $50 million its convention pumps into Utah's economy depends upon wild forests, not clear cuts. So if the legislature is interested in enacting a working forest bill, I'd suggest that the committee broaden the definition of what we consider to be working forest. direct the state forester to manage any acquired forest for a multiplicity of values, and specify that a fixed percentage, perhaps half, of any acquired forest lands be set aside for conservation purposes. As it is now, the bill directs the state forest to sell any properties that are not destined for future harvest. Also, while the bill is nominally intended to facilitate the acquisition of private lands, there's no explicit provisions to direct the department and the state forester should they acquire any public lands from the federal government. The conservation safeguards associated with all federal forests are significantly stronger, and if the state were to acquire any federal lands, the department should be directed to maintain those safeguards. In fact, since some private landowners, mainly those certified by the Forest Stewardship Council, have implemented management techniques which exceed those required by the Oregon Forest Practices Act, I'd ask the committee to insert language mandating that conservation policies associated with any acquired forest lands be maintained, much as an easement. In closing, I urge the committee to work with the state forester and Oregon Department of Forestry to redraft the bill so the management prescriptions or any forest acquired under this act reflect the vast array of values Oregonians expect from their public lands. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. Be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Mr. Ward, thank you very much. Nope, I think you're off the hook.
Okay.
Appreciate your testimony very much. David Moskowitz.
Chair Vakian, members of the committee, my name is David Moskowitz, and I'm representing the Wild Salmon Center and the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited today. And I'd like to concur in the remarks that Jay Ward just finished presenting. I would like to say that both organizations I'm representing would like to work with the Department of Forestry to craft a bill that satisfies some of the needs that were originally aimed at being addressed here. The conversion of lands out of forest production to rural residential development or subdivision development at the edge of urban growth boundaries, I think that's really the purpose of trying to establish what essentially is another class of state lands. But we encourage you to ask the Department of Forestry to work with the stakeholders in bringing this forward. We're not experts on the bonding and whether that's viable. But on the policy side, we definitely want to participate in trying to make to address this problem, because the conversion of forest land to non-forest uses is an issue that the industry should be concerned about as well as the counties. So we stand ready to work with the department. Just want to support the concept. Thank you for your time. I'm happy to answer any questions.
I believe you are off the hook, too. Thank you, Mr. Moskowitz. Is there anybody else that's coming to the room late for Senate Bill 98? Well, we clearly have a little bit more work to do on the bill. The interesting thing is, even though there are some very divergent opinions about the direction the bill should take, as the testimony showed, every person that testified today has expressed an interest in talking with the other side and trying to find some way to make it work. And so we'll have some time to do that and possibly bring the bill back again. And at that time, we will have more time for public testimony as well as a possible work session. So with that, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 98. And I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 338. And Mr. Davis, if you could, I did see Senator Walker here. I don't see her in the room now.
Staff's here.
Ah, okay. Thank you. Yes, Ms. Marshall, would you do that, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 338 expands air quality provisions from wood stove emissions to more broadly be defined as solid fuel burning devices, modifies provisions related to the sale of fuel burning devices, fireplaces, or trash burners, renames the Residential Wood Heating Air Quality Improvement Fund to Residential Solid Fuel Heating Air Quality Improvement Fund, and modifies certain aspects of the fund, modifies prohibition on installation of used solid fuel burning devices, modifies prohibition on sale of solid fuel burning devices, and it modifies prohibition on removal of solid fuel burning devices. And for the record, we've received letters of support from Karen King of the City of Pendleton, Brian Litt of the Columbia River Gorge Commission, Marilyn Hope from Lane County, a regional air protection agency, and Donna Hippert from the Portland area.
Thank you. Senator Walker, are you ready?
I am.
Thank you for joining us. Why don't you come on up, and Andy Ginsberg.
Yep,
from the department, if you'd like to join the senator.
Oh, lipstick.
Well, keep that on your side of the table, please.
And we've only had guys up here today.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Get those Department of Forestry guys back up here.
Well, what are you guys doing here?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vicki Walker, State Senator, District 7. We rushed back from our trip out to the Department of Public Safety and Training Facility where we shot guns and drove fast cars today. It was quite a fascinating trip.
Only shotguns?
Hmm?
No automatic weapons?
We shot guns,
okay.
Not shotguns.
Okay.
But anyway, I brought back my person that I shot, which was a cardboard person, and I'm a pretty good shot, so I'm going to hang it up in
my office. Senator Burdick will appreciate that greatly.
She was a better shot.
She's better than me. All right. Well, Mr. Chair, with me I have Annie Ginsberg from the Department of Environmental Quality and Sophia Hitty from my office, who does policy work for me on environmental issues. And I'm just going to briefly introduce the bill and let these two take it away because I'm supposed to be in committee right now, and don't tell on me. This bill came to my attention during the interim when I chaired the Senate Interim Natural Resources and Alternative Energy Committee. Mr. Ginsberg traveled to Newburgh, where we had a hearing and talked about air pollution in Oregon and how we were actually not going to be meeting those EPA expectations much longer. And part of the problem is wood stoves. And a lot of Oregonians use wood stoves, and I don't want to stop Oregonians from using wood stoves, but our goal is to make sure that they're burning, using wood stoves that burn cleaner fuel and meet EPA standards. So this bill sets up a program. It's called Heat Smart Legislation. I think it's pretty fantastic. One of the things when they were discussing it in the interim was, for me, there's a lot of low-income people who use wood heat because it's cheap to use. And so if we're going to be on this road to changing out wood stoves, I wanted some kind of a program to help low-income people. The department will talk to you about that program. I think it's a great one. And I know you'll hear some testimony from some folks who don't think we should be in the business of fining people, but we do fine people for violating air quality standards, and it is the department's duty to collect those fines, and that's where some of the money comes from to pay for this program. And if we're in the business of fining people, we should be in the business of collecting that money. So I don't really see that as a contrary indication to what the department does. So with that, Mr. Chair, if you'll allow me to be excused, I'll leave the bill in these good hands.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
And whichever one of you want to go next, go right ahead.
Oh. Hello, Chair Avakian, members of the committee. My name is Sophia Hitty, and I'm the legislative assistant for Senator Vicki Walker. And I'm here today to urge your support for Senate Bill 338, Heat Smart for Clean Air. Okay. When she was chair of the Senate Interim Committee on Energy and Natural Resources, Senator Walker requested a bill be drafted to address the public health concerns from wood smoke. Wood stoves provide low-cost heat for a home while also helping to create an inviting and comfortable atmosphere, but unfortunately, they release harmful amounts of fine particulate benzene and carbon dioxide into the air that contribute to several public health risks. New EPA standards reflect findings that fine particulates are more harmful than we thought. These new standards will most likely put two different Oregon communities in violation, which are Oak Ridge and Klamath Falls, and put about 12 other communities at risk. In these communities, wood stoves are the leading contributor of fine particulate into the air, which contributes to decreased lung function and asthma. Wood stoves can continue to be used as an affordable, inviting way to heating home, but they can certified wood stoves can do this in a way that is 70% cleaner than uncertified wood stoves. Replacing uncertified wood stoves would also reduce benzene, which can cause leukemia and immune system damage. Behind gasoline, wood stoves are the largest source of benzene and are a problem that we actually have the authority to address in Oregon. Certified wood stoves produce 25% less benzene than old stoves. An estimated 420,000 wood stoves are in use in Oregon, and at least half of these are uncertified. The goal of HeatSmart is to replace these with other cleaner sources of heat, and this bill does this in two main ways. One is with grants and coupons to help people replace their wood stoves, and the other is by requiring homeowners to replace their old stoves when they're selling their home. The bill also addresses loopholes in the federal program that exempt certain burning devices from meeting these EPA standards. Many low-income people depend on wood stoves for heat due to either a lack of access to natural gas in their area, or simply because wood stoves are a cheap alternative to electric heat. And this bill aims to help them. Once they replace an uncertified stove with help from a grant, their heating costs will decrease because a certified wood stove, you can use less wood in it to produce the same amount of heat, so it'll end up being cheaper. Old stoves create indoor air pollution that can cause asthma in children, as well as creating fire hazards because they're not installed to today's codes. So thank you for supporting this common sense bill, and I can answer any questions you have, or Andy can help.
Sophia, was this your first time testifying before a legislative committee?
Yeah. Can you tell?
Very nice. No.
Okay.
Very nicely done, I think.
Yes,
so nice. So nicely, in fact, I'm not even going to give the committee a chance to ask you any questions.
I can try.
I see you with a pistol in her hands.
With a pistol. Is that right? I'll bet. No, thank you very much.
Guns today, so. I feel pretty comfortable, but...
Good. Well, thank you for doing it.
Thank you.
Chair Vakian and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Andy Ginsberg. I'm the Air Quality Administrator for the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. And as Senator Walker said, DEQ had developed this bill with the governor's office, but it didn't make the final cut for the governor's recommended budget. So the Senate Interim Committee on Energy and Natural Resources introduced the bill, and the governor's office and DEQ hope that it can be included as an add-back to the budget if revenue is available. As Sophia said, Oregon faces health risks from fine particulates and from benzene. We have new federal standards that will put two of our areas in violation and a number of other areas at risk. Wood stoves are the largest source of fine particulate pollution in those communities, and also a significant source of benzene, and our certified stoves are a good solution. In fact, Oregon invented the certified stove program back in the 1980s, and this has since been picked up by EPA, so now it's a national program, and all states in the country are enjoying the benefits. And while this program has been very successful, the problem is that wood stoves last for a long time. So while new wood stoves are required to be certified, there's no requirement that existing wood stoves be replaced, so we still do have a large legacy number of uncertified stoves out there, as Sophia said. I'll just briefly run through the provisions of the bill. The first is a wood stove replacement fund. It's intended to provide grants to homeowners. Our goal is to have it run by local governments where they would like to run it, and the funding would come from penalties, civil penalties on asbestos and open burning violations that would be deposited into the wood stove fund. The second provision in the bill is a requirement to remove uncertified wood stoves upon sale of home. This concept was pioneered by the city of Bend, and it's been recently adopted by a number of other communities in Oregon, and several others are still considering it, as I think you'll hear about today. The idea is that as homes turn over, the certified stove is replaced, and so we'll gradually build up a fleet of cleaner and safer wood stoves. And the third provision of the bill is to close certain loopholes, as Sophia mentioned. And under the federal program, there's a very narrow definition of what's a wood stove, and we have things that look like wood stoves but are technically not wood stoves, so they don't have to meet emission standards. This was a known problem back when we adopted the wood stove certification program back in the 1980s, but there were only a small number of these exempt stoves in use. Now there are quite a few different types of exempt stoves that are out there, and this would give the Environmental Quality Commission the authority to set standards that would be equivalent to what a wood stove would have to meet. In addition, there's a growing problem with outside wood-fired boilers. We're starting to see them in Oregon. Back east, they're a very big problem. They're essentially a large boiler in which you can throw large pieces of wood or anything else that you want really into them. They smoke a lot because they basically have water circulating around them. That water's heated and goes back into your home to heat the home, so the stove never really gets up to temperature needed for good combustion. So those things are very, very smoky, and they're a large problem back east. Just earlier this week, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency announced a voluntary program with the outside wood-fired boiler industry where they're going to provide some models that are much cleaner. I know that a number of eastern states are in the process of adopting standards for those stoves. So we're not the only state looking at this problem, but it's important for us to kind of get ahead of it, because once these stoves are installed in Oregon, they'll be very expensive and difficult to retrofit or replace. And then the final provision of this bill is to close one last loophole. We currently prohibit the burning of certain materials outside in piles or in burn barrels, plastics and garbage and things that create toxic chemicals or noxious odors. But there's a loophole that allows these same materials to be burned in a fireplace or a wood stove. Most people don't do that, but some do, and we get complaints about it occasionally, and unfortunately we have no authority to tell people that they can't do that. So HeatSmart would set the same standards for inside burning of those materials as we currently have for outside. It wouldn't be a new big enforcement program for DEQ. It would be an educational program where we let people know about the requirements. In terms of the funding for the bill, because it's not in the governor's recommended budget, the legislative fiscal office has asked DEQ to prepare a fiscal impact statement. That's not finished yet, but the revenue, the penalty, civil penalties will generate approximately $300,000 per biennium for the fund. In addition, DEQ will need half a position to implement the program. And I'll note that we have Senator Walker alluded. We have talked with stakeholders, some of whom would prefer to fund this program with general fund rather than using civil penalties, and I'm sure you'll hear more about that in others' testimony today. Finally, I just wanted to mention some potential amendments to the bill. We've been talking with the Oregon Hearth Patio and Barbecue Association and also the Oregon Association of Realtors, and they have recommended some very practical implementation amendments, the technical amendments that would help us implement the bill. I won't go through them all here right now, but just to give you a flavor of it, some of them have to do with the timing of new requirements to make sure that the Environmental Quality Commission has the time to develop implementing regulations before a provision would go into effect. One has to do with the definition of a pellet stove. Pellet stoves are very, very clean. They're much cleaner than even a certified stove, and we want to make sure that we don't inadvertently create barriers to the use of pellet stoves. Another would be to ensure that when the fund is used to purchase a cleaner heating device, that we make sure that device is a properly vented device that doesn't create indoor air pollution. And finally, we want to make sure that where we have our requirement to remove wood stoves upon sale of a home, the realtors would like to have a uniform disclosure for that, so that we don't have a different form that's used in each community, and it's much simpler to implement that way. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
And committee, since Ms. Hitty has another 7 or 8 minutes under her belt at the table, feel free to ask questions of either. Senator Atkinson.
Thank you. Andy, I just thought of a couple of questions that I didn't think of first time we met. But if I were to sell a house under Section 9 on page 4, the sale of a residential building, let's assume that in my shop, at my farm, I've got a wood stove. It's used, I don't know, 4 or 5 times a month, let's say, three, four months of the year. Do I have to, upon the sale of my farm, take that barn stove out and destroy it? It's not primary. It's not my residence, but it's on the property.
Chair of Akin, Senator Atkinson, that's one of the technical correct amendments we're going to make is a definition of a residential property, and the details of that haven't been worked out. The idea is to focus on wood stoves that are used as a primary source of heat, but it may be that we'll have to work through the details of that. There may be certain circumstances where an ornamental stove wouldn't be affected. I can't exactly answer the question because we haven't worked on that definition yet, but that's why the question was raised to us.
And can you tell me about destroyed? I mean, if it's not defined and it's okay to have it in your shop but not in your house, aren't we doing some economic harm to somebody that wants to get rid of this wood stove and have somebody use it in their shop? And so that's one issue. And the second issue, what does destroyed mean? Are we going to buy your department some plasma torches to cut them in half, or what does that mean?
Chair Vaki and Senator Atkinson, the idea is that we don't want to have a used uncertified stove reinstalled elsewhere in Oregon. So the idea of destroying or disabling the stove would be that it wouldn't be able to be reinstalled and create pollution elsewhere in the state.
So, but who does destroying under this bill? Am I missing something?
The wood stove, when it's removed, would be rendered inoperable, so they couldn't be reinstalled somewhere else. So the typically what would happen is you would have the wood stove would be taken to a landfill or a recycling facility and actually eliminated. So you wouldn't be taking it and then selling it elsewhere.
Really?
Mr. Chair.
That's amazing. Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a series of questions. First, and whoever's best to answer this, and under Section 5 of the bill, you've got garbage, treated wood, and any other materials described in rules. Well, I guess, first of all, is there a definition someplace of what is garbage, and is there a definition of what is treated wood?
Chair Vaki and Senator Beyer, the Environmental Quality Commission has existing regulations that apply to outside burning, and the idea was to have the same materials subject to prohibition for inside burning. One of the technical corrections we want to make is to clarify that wood pellets that are used in wood stoves are allowed to be burned. So we do need to have implementing definitions that will clarify exactly what those terms mean.
And then on number 11, what other materials do you envision adopting rules to cover?
Chair Vaki and Senator Beyer, at this point, I don't envision particular materials, but the idea is to have the Environmental Quality Commission have the authority, if a specific material is identified that's creating toxic air pollutants or creating public health risks, that they would have the ability to specifically identify those materials.
Another question? I guess my same concern over Section 3 sub C, when you're writing rules on other types of fuel burning devices, I'd like to know what you have in mind of writing a rule against there.
Chair Vaki and Senator Beyer, the Environmental Quality Commission actually has experience, since, as I mentioned earlier, we identified the wood stove adopt the original wood stove certification program that was picked up nationally. The idea would be to set standards for exempt stoves that are comparable to standards that are subject to EPA regulations, so we wouldn't create an incentive for people to avoid the regulations by revising the wood stove so it just technically falls out of EPA's definition. So the standards would be the same as those that apply to wood stoves that fall under EPA's regulation.
I guess, as we spoke in my office, I'm not real thrilled about the part that would require the stove coming out at sale of a house. That brings up a question I hadn't thought of when you were in my office. I would ask you then. Would that be a Measure 37 issue, because you would be reducing, this is a new regulation, was reducing the value of some that he has?
Chair Vaki and Senator Beyer, I'm not a Measure 37 expert, so I really probably shouldn't answer that question. But this particular bill doesn't establish land use requirements, so I would be surprised if
I don't
were,
think you can plead the Fifth Amendment. I think I'd try if I were you.
We can research that question and get back to you.
Chair, I don't think Measure 3-7 just deals with land use, does it?
We have the resident expert on the committee here today.
No, I don't know the answer to that, but you're welcome to go try and figure that out, Senator Beyer, if you'd like to. Any other questions? Senator Bates.
It occurs to me that possibly there's another gain for this bill. Many of the newer stoves are also safer. Every year in Medford or Ashland, because we do a lot of this type of burning, we have flue fires and some fires in the stoves themselves, either or the material right next to them. Are these certified stoves any safer than the older stoves?
Chair Bakian and Senator Bates, the new stoves are safer, and one of the things is that when a new stove is installed, of course, it was installed to today's building codes, and that in and of itself creates improved safety. But these new stoves are safer.
Thank you.
All right, good. Thanks very much to both of you. We've got about eight folks more to go, and so I'm going to call you up two at a time. Ralph Groner, Commissioner Elliott.
Oh my God!
You put these things in the landfill. I'm going to stop asking my questions.
You want me to?
He's got coffee. He's good to go.
Mr. Groner, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ralph Groner. If I'm talking too loud, I just got hearing aids, and I'm hearing myself talk, and it sounds, is it okay? Thank you. I'm Ralph Groner. I represent AFSCME. For those of you who don't know what that is, it's American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. I represent not only the DEQ local, the employees of DEQ, but also in here today on behalf of quite a large coalition that's working cooperatively, including business interest, environmental interest, and labor interest in what's called the Oregon Clean Air Initiative. So we're all excited, and I hate to spend a few minutes, but this is one part of the Oregon Clean Air Initiative, and it's the kickoff. And the Oregon Clean Air Initiative is what we're here to talk about, Senate Bill 338. And in the packet I handed out, I assume you already have this, but on the seventh page in the back, you'll see what the very articulate young lady articulated as to wood stoves when it comes to sources of fine particulate, benzene, etc. So I can skip all that, only to say that HeatSmart, as the entire Oregon Clean Air Initiative package of 5, 6, 7 bills, plus the air portion of the DEQ budget, represent a major attempt by the year 2017 in total air contaminants to bring Oregon up to a very, very, I call this heat smart as health smart, and to me the entire clean air initiative has to do with the numbers we'll be presenting on health care costs due to air pollution from benzene to fine particulates. If I were to show you the EPA numbers nationally, as well as Oregon, and the latest statistics on who's out of compliance and who's heading out of compliance, and I were to look at wood stoves as a major creator of benzene, as well as fine particulate, and then I look where I live in Metro Portland, and I didn't think wood stoves, I would out where Senator Beyer lives, think there would wood stoves, but quite frankly, the Portland metro area has problems with wood stove, as well as do the rural valleys of this state. So the coalition is working together cooperatively. The money that will be needed will come in front of those of you on Ways and Means. Mr. Ginsburg testified to $300,000. Our goal is to somehow get that to $500,000, which is very cheap indeed, if in fact we take the time, and we will, to address the question of the health problems caused by the non-certified wood stoves, along with concomitantly with the other issues we'll be addressing in front of this committee or in front of Ways and Means as a package for the state of Oregon. The reason I'm excited, it's the first time industry for the most part, and if we have a problem on Title V permitting of the whole package, that'll be a question of how much the permit fee, and I'm not worried about that because we need the package to pass. We need $500,000 to get this package working My concern as a former community action staffer was what happens to the senior citizen who makes $800 a month on Social Security and couldn't afford the wood stove, the certified wood stove. Mr. Ginsburg tells me that if we get that to 500 thou, we can totally grant that and provide that wood stove. That was a part that really excited me, not only the safety from my fire marshal's side, which we also represent, but also OHSU, and their, by the way, diesel-free hospital, which we represent, and collectively DEQ. This has become the major health package, other than the health policy package that Senator Bates is so wonderfully working on. But I do want to comment one last comment on the health smart aspect of this. The fact of the matter is reducing health costs and getting Oregonians and children and how we fund it is only one part of the health issue in Oregon. The air contamination provided by a variety of sources, a major source of health issues from cancer to heart, to lung, et cetera. And we can document those, and that data is coming in through CROEC and other agencies and EPA. We would hope that you feel some sense of excitement. If you want to amend the bill to get at some of your concerns, that's fine, but we want to go forward with this is our lead-off bill in the Oregon Clean Air. And you have the package, which includes that Total Oregon Clean Air Initiative. Thank you for this time to be in front of you.
Thank you, Mr. Groner. Anybody? Good. Thank you, Mr. Groner.
Thank you.
Commissioner, welcome. Normally, you having made the long drive from Klamath County, would have had you testify first so that you could get on your way back, but I thought you might find the department's and Senator Walker's testimony of interest, so I hope you didn't mind the wait.
Not at all, Senator. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
John Elliott, 305 Main Street, Klamath Falls, Oregon. I'm a Klamath County Commissioner and also chair this year of the commission. Chair Avakian and members of the committee, I want to thank you very much for the opportunity to testify today and express my support of Senate Bill 338. When I was informed that this bill had been drafted and a testimony was to be offered, I had to smile. For the better part of the last year, I've been working with our Klamath County Air Quality Advisory Committee in restructuring, redrafting, and amending our ordinance dealing with air quality and addressing exactly the same issue, the removal of non-certified wood stoves from a residence to include outbuildings at the time of sale. I would also like to respectfully answer Senator Byers' earlier question. Health and safety issues are specifically exempted under Measure 37. So it's a question that has arisen in our own advisory committee and one that has been answered. As I said, I am in support of this bill. Klamath County has previously been listed as non-attainment in air quality related to two areas, particulate matter and carbon monoxide. Due to diligent community efforts over many years, attainment was achieved and these restrictions were removed. This effort was not without economic damage, however. Companies that would have otherwise located within Klamath County decided against it since the non-attainment status would have precluded their efforts to obtain an air quality discharge permit. Klamath County adopted tougher air quality standards than were required some 5 years ago, and by that I mean we adopted the PM2.5 standard rather than the current federally and state required PM10. We are proposing changes to our ordinance which describe in detail the procedures to be followed in the removal of non-certified solid fuel burning devices, including their certified destruction, informing buyers and sellers of homes within Klamath County of the provisions of the ordinance and verification that the devices have, in fact, been removed. Evidence of the satisfaction of these requirements will be a required part of real estate closing transactions. We have engaged the Klamath County Association of Realtors in the development of the procedures, education of the real estate industry of the need for the changes, and their cooperation in implementing those changes. Although Senate Bill 338 is silent on these issues, I make a strong assumption that those details will be developed by the Department of Environmental Quality should this bill become law. I would like to draw your attention to areas that I believe need further development. First, in Section 12, Sub F, page 6 at line 41 of the bill, if you happen to have it in front of you. While this item exempts fires set by a public agency in the course of certain activities, it makes no reference to a smoke management plan. And I am proud to report that, or maybe I'm not proud to report, that all the way up here we had clear blue skies and it was beautiful weather, and about 20 miles or so west of Corvallis there was a large plume of smoke, and it was drifting to the southeast. And I dare say that that put out more particulate matter and contributed more to the haze in the Willamette Valley than any number of wood stoves would have done. So while this ordinance, or while this bill is a step in the right direction, I submit there is a great deal more to be done. While a reference to a smoke management plan may be found in other statutes or administrative rules, I believe such a plan needs to be referenced here with a further requirement that those agencies be required to provide notification to either the Department of Environmental Quality or the appropriate county official of the date, time, and place of such proposed fires. No mention is made of private timber companies. However, I would encourage a dialogue with them to seek the same objectives. Also in Section 12J, I would specifically ask that Christmas trees be chipped rather than burned. On the subject of chipping, while it may not be germane to this specific bill, I do believe that all avenues should be explored in an effort to reduce air pollution from burning, beginning with the obvious question, why burn? To many, the answer lies in cost effectiveness. While it may be the cheapest alternative, this answer was rejected when wigwam burners were essentially outlawed in this state several years ago. Faced with a mountain of sawdust, the lumber companies found uses for it. From that came products such as particle board, compressed wood logs, oriented strand board, and wood pellets to be used in pellet stoves. These efforts consequently stretched the timber resource by the wise use of material previously thought of and regarded as waste. Similarly, I believe that alternatives to burning of so-called waste in our forest land can be found. Chipping can produce mulch for water conservation efforts, biomass for electrical generation, or simply distributed in the forest to decompose and enrich the soil. Slash piles should be viewed as a resource. I strongly encourage members of the committee to seek funding to provide for pilot projects demonstrating alternative methods of fuels reduction and disposal. I would start with the worst first. Those areas of the state recognized as having poor air quality include Jackson County, Medford, Lane County, Oak Ridge, and Klamath Falls or Klamath County. These areas have unique geophysical features that trap slow-moving air and make them susceptible to poor air conditions. Finally, the bill provides for incentives to aid in the removal of non-certified solid fuel burning devices. I applaud the author for the awareness of financial reality for many of our citizens. An effort should be made to assist the low-income households. I respectfully tag onto that request one further observation. There is no provision made in the bill to assist counties in the monitoring or enforcement of the provisions of the bill. Klamath County comprises over 6,000 square miles with one FTE environmental health position assigned to air quality. There is no longer an Oregon Department of Environmental Quality office in Klamath County. We would welcome the opportunity in cooperation with the department to develop work plans, staffing levels, and budget estimates for later submission to this committee for its consideration. Again, thank you for the opportunity and welcome your questions.
None, but it was very helpful testimony, and we appreciate you making the drive all the way up here.
You're very welcome.
Very helpful to the committee. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sue Fratt and Lindsay Capps. Sorry, we're having a discussion up here about putting wood stoves in landfills and what we're going to do about that. The senator and I are going to start a new recycling program, and I don't know, hook the wood stoves into it or something. I don't know. Maybe the department can get on that one with some amendments, huh?
I'm
Ms. Farag, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Avakian and members of the committee, for this opportunity to speak with you. I am Sue Fratt, the CEO of the American Lung Association of Oregon, 7420 Southwest Bridgeport Road, Suite 200, Tigard, 97224. On behalf of the American Lung Association of Oregon, I ask for your support on this Senate bill. This bill is a great step in the right direction. Wood burning is a serious public health risk because wood smoke contains high levels of particulate matter and other air pollutants. The more we learn, the more dangerous particulate pollution appears. A study published today in the New England Journal of Medicine found that risks to healthy women over the age of 50 were much higher than we had previously estimated. Being in areas where the particulate pollution levels are higher greatly increases their risk of heart attack or stroke, including their risk of dying from these. The particulate matter adversely affects the health of Oregonians with emphysema, chronic bronchitis, pediatric and adult asthma, cardiovascular disease, and diabetes. In the American Lung Association's 2005 State of the Air Report, three Oregon counties received an F for short-term particulate matter. They are Jackson, Klamath, and Lane counties. These counties have a combined population of more than 585,000 people. Just in these three counties alone, more than 270,000 individuals have one or more of the previously stated health issues. These Oregonians' health is seriously threatened. Due to the Oak Ridge area in Lane County, Lane County is rated the seventh worst county in the nation for short-term particulate matter in this report. Support of this bill will help the residents of Oak Ridge, Lane County, and all Oregonians to improve their health, environment, and quality of life. On behalf of the American Lung Association of Oregon, I ask for your support on Senate Bill 338. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Now, if you don't mind sitting at the table for a moment, I'm going to hold off on questions to you until Dr. and Senator Bates gets back in the room.
Certainly.
Okay. Mr. Capps?
Chair Avakian and members of the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to address you today on this issue. We agree very much with the Lung Association that this is an important bill, and we believe that the legislature has a really important opportunity with SB 338 to promote the health and potential of every Oregon child and provide a better environment for our kids to learn, live, and grow. Many of you probably read the October 29th article in the Oregonian enlightening many residents of the Portland metro area that every breath they take exposes them to unhealthy levels of benzene. As has been testified to here by Sophia very eloquently, benzene is a cancer-causing chemical linked to childhood leukemia. Long-term benzene exposure affects bone marrow, can cause anemia, chromosomal damage, and developmental problems in children, as well as making the immune system more susceptible to infection. But benzene isn't just a Portland problem. Ambient levels and exposures are significantly higher in most areas of the state than levels considered safe by the Department of Environmental Quality. Both children and adults are commonly exposed to benzene by breathing automobile and truck exhaust. In 2002, for example, approximately 60% of out-of-doors benzene emissions were from engines burning gasoline or diesel. But wood stoves and fireplaces are another major culprit, comprising approximately 27% of benzene emissions in our state. Certified wood stoves reduce benzene emissions by 25% compared to uncertified stoves. So we think this is a good initiative to support. Certified wood stoves also help reduce other dangerous air toxics, including but not limited to acrolein, dioxins, and formaldehyde. And certified wood stoves are very effective at reducing particulate emissions, with levels 70% lower than uncertified wood stoves. These tiny particles slip past the body's defense and deep into the lungs, causing various respiratory illnesses. Finally, SB 33 addresses also a major environmental challenge as well. It will reduce emissions of carbon dioxide, the primary greenhouse gas contributing to global warming. Global warming threatens our health, our environment, and our economy, and we're already feeling the effects of it in our state. So for all of these reasons, we strongly encourage you to pass SB 338, and I welcome any questions you might have. Thank you.
Committee?
Senator Bates. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick comment. Now I'm going to put my physician hat on just for a second here. We are in this country facing an epidemic of asthma right now. And if for no other reason than that, this is a bill that needs to be passed and put into effect. We now know that the epidemic increase of asthma is primarily the result of pollution in the air. We didn't know that five or six years ago, and it's been pretty well proven that's where it's coming from now. We weren't tracking it, didn't know where it was coming from, but I'm sure you're aware of this. The other issues you're talking about from a health point of view are important, but I would highlight asthma as the real problem we have to deal with. And in our area, when we have an inversion in the wintertime, our emergency rooms and our physicians just see an upsurge immediately of asthmatic patients coming in. It's amazing what the difference is there. And so I appreciate you bringing that issue forward. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, Senator.
Well, thank you both very
much
for your testimony.
Thank you.
Steve West and Larry Kirkpatrick.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, Senators. My name is Steve West, and I represent the Oregon Hearth, Patio, and Barbecue Association. Today, I'm very happy to be joined by Fred Kirkpatrick. Fred is a past president of our association, a small business owner, and currently serves as our legislative and codes coordinator. Also, I'd like to recognize in the audience today we have Larry McCandles, who is also a small business owner and one of our board members, and Harvey Gale, who is the executive director of our association. I want to thank you for giving us the opportunity to testify, and I want to thank the folks at ODEQ for the opportunity that we've had to work with them on this bill, and I'm going to ask Fred to do the heavy lifting and provide the formal testimony.
Very good. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Senator Vaughan and Chairman Vaughan and Senators. I own a family-run business in the Portland metro area, and we sell and serve with hearth appliances. Been doing this type of work for over 30 years, ever since I was in my early 20s.
Let me stop you for just 1 second. Just because we're recording and need to have a clear record of who's talking, just go ahead and say your name yourself, and then please jump right back in.
Fred Kirkpatrick from Classic Heat Source in Portland, Oregon.
Very good.
Okay. I've been doing this ever since I've been in my early 20s. It's a family-run business. I feel a sense of responsibility. I've been part of the problem, and now I intend to be part of the solution. The Oregon Hearth and Hearth Products Association represents installers and retailers of home heating appliances, and believe it or not, we're in support of this bill. There's a few amendments that we'd like to see made on it. We've worked very closely with DEQ on this legislation called the Heat Smart Bill. We've met with DEQ in person and by phone and by email to come up with a general agreement on the majority of the bill. Our understanding is that the new authority granted to the Environmental Quality Commission will neither affect the legality of EPA-certified wood stoves, as in current law, nor require EPA-certified wood stoves to be required to adhere to more stringent standards than what the federal government does, the Environmental Protection Agency. DEQ officials have told us or assured us that it would not. We also do not expect the EQC to adopt more stringent standards than what the Environmental Protection Agency has for appliances that might in the future be certified by EPA. Some of the amendments we've talked to them about, DEQ has agreed to exempt pellet stoves and pellet stove fuel from further regulation. We question why Oregon should regard the emissions of these well-engineered appliances as an air quality hazard when neither the EPA nor any of the other state views them in that matter. Furthermore, adopting policies that restrict pellet stoves and therefore pellet fuel is inconsistent with the governor's renewable energy agenda. Pellets are both a renewable energy source and Oregon-based pellet fuel. There are several manufacturers in Oregon that contribute significantly to the Oregon economy with that manufacture pellets. Another amendment that we talked with them about was to redefine treated wood as waste lumber containing chemicals for weatherproofing. Under the current definition, it would have included treated wood would mean like manufactured logs and things like that. So I think they've pretty much accepted that. Another amendment that we talked about was we reviewed several other amendments with DEQ, and most of them we agreed in principle and were accepted. Although the exact language had not been determined, I might add that since we've made our testimonial paper here a few minutes before we walked in, we were handed those papers and we've had a chance to review them. And although we haven't completed that review, they look pretty good to us. I think my biggest concern, if these new laws are adopted, is that there's currently rules on the books in September of 1992 that prohibit advertising and selling of non-certified wood stoves. And you can basically, you can go to any newspaper, pick up any newspaper during the winter time, local community newspaper, Oregonian, Gresham Outlook, go to Craigslist if you want to see a big violation of that, and there's constantly wood stoves, non-certified illegal wood stoves that are being sold and traded, and I guess my comment there is that I would like to see DEQ do a better job of enforcing that. We have existing laws there. We just need to do a better job of enforcing them. That pretty much sums up my testimony. Wanted to thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak here, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Very good. And we appreciate you being here, too, committee. Let me ask you one question about the treated wood, since it's come up a couple of times. I would imagine that you're surely getting a wood that is treated in the manufacturing process, like is typically used for fences and such. Are you also including in that wood that maybe some fellow built a deck with and then stained it and then 8 years later tears down the deck? Would that be considered wood under the amendment that you presented, treated wood?
Would you like me to read it? Would you like me to read the actual amendment, sir? I have it. It's just one sentence.
Sure.
As Fred commented, we've been given this list of amendments just shortly before the hearing, so these are still new to us too. But right now, the proposed amendment reads: treated wood, except manufactured fire logs and solid fuels manufactured to be burned in solid fuel burning devices.
Right, and I had read it as well, and I guess my question is, I'm trying to get, and you, I think, were saying that you agreed with the amendment. Did I hear you right?
That's right.
And in I'm wondering is your intent to catch the wood that was treated during the manufacturing process, like you would typically see, or is it also going to include wood that was not treated in the manufacturing process, but later somebody stained or painted at home?
I Senator Abaki, and I couldn't answer that. I think that would be a more appropriate to direct towards DEQ. I don't want to speak for them, but I would think that their intention was to eliminate wood that had been treated, like with the creosote and zinc chromate, the preservatives to keep it from, you know, underground type treatments. I would think that would be their intention, but again, you might want to ask them.
No, the question certainly would have ended up in their lap at some point. But since you had mentioned it and have some expertise in, you know, in the industry here, I just wanted to see if you had a comment on it. Senator Prozanski?
Mr. Chair, I think it would be both. The reality, clearly the stuff that's been manufactured and pressure treated and that process is one that has longer longevity. But the reality, if you looking at the bill on page 2, section 5, it goes through different, components that they would want to not allow to be burned, and paint is one of them, as well as chemicals. So the stuff that you'd be putting on your fence, I mean, clearly, I guess you could say if it was really old fence, 10 years down, the road hadn't been resurfaced, maybe it had worn off. But I think the intent is to make certain you don't have stuff that's had some type of application of chemicals and paint to be burned in the stove, because you're going to end up with that same issues.
Thank you, Senator. Anything else? No. Thank you very much, both of you.
Thank you.
Arlen Levy and John Ledger.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the afternoon, actually, members of the chairman, members of the committee. I'm John Ledger with Associated Organ Industries, and I have just a couple of quick comments. You should not burn painted wood because some of it contains lead. And also, like I used to do on my house in Boise, we put on mildew-resistant paint because it had mercury in it. So probably it's just not a good idea. No. This is a subject kind of dear to me because, as some of you know, I had Mr. Ginsburg's job under Cecil Andrus when he was governor of Idaho, and we dealt with wood stoves extensively. We're going to have quite a few areas coming into non-attainment for small particulate, and it's going to have to be dealt with. And dealing with them based on large sources, we've kind of squeezed the lemon juice out of there as much as you can, and it's primarily wood stoves now in these small communities during the winter. And when you go into an area that has non-attainment for particulate, there are severe restrictions on business expansion, industrial expansion, severe restrictions. Sometimes you just can't. Plus, it makes the employees sick. So you kind of lose on both sides. I mean, it's just not a good thing to do. You have to get into attainment, or you'll lose your federal highway funds. We think this is a bill that has a lot of good pieces to it, and I'm not going to go through a lot of the things you heard before, but you really this really has to be addressed. One of the things that was mentioned was the issue of fines, and contrary to maybe popular belief, we support bigger and better fines for open burning. Open burning is the largest source of dioxin in the United States right now by far, and an open burning of, I have read a study that showed the dioxin releases from 22 households burning their trash daily, every day, openly. It released about as much dioxin as a 200 ton per day municipal incinerator. The open burning releases enormous amounts of pollution, and it's not the kind of stuff you want. So it is in our interest to have a very vigorous DEQ open burning reduction program. You'll get more bang from your buck doing that any other way. Also, we are obviously want to see a reduction in particulate level in these areas. The only concern we have on this bill, and it looks like there are a lot of things that are going to be amended in, that's going to be worked on a bit, is we have great problems with the idea of penalty money being used to fund programs. It's very rare, and one of the things I'm approached all the time when people get a fine with DEQ and they collect or they assess a million or whatever a year, and they'll go, well, you know, they just want to feather their programs. And you have to tell them, no, it goes into the general fund. The DEQ levies penalties, and they negotiate those penalties based on the violation. And they are not feathering their nest in any way by by assessing you a penalty. There's one very small exception to that. I think it's the tanks program. But it certainly is not something as widespread as any family that burns trash across the state. The DEQ has built up over the last 10 years, I'd say, a great deal of credibility that I've seen, much more than it had previously, especially within the industrial community. And I think going down the road of funding program elements, even if it's a dedicated fund, out of penalties that normally would just go to the general fund, is a very bad idea. We understand that they need the money to run the program. The funds would go into the general fund anyway, and we would certainly have no problems whatsoever with this thing being funded out of the general fund. So on the enforcement side, there's a break. You know, there's a break in the flow between the penalty and the agency, and the break is you, because you would appropriate that money. And we think actually that would be a good thing to do. The other thing that's troubling, of course, is that the agency will have expanded capacity to promulgate rules that will generate penalties that will go into the fund. So really, we're looking at something fairly open-ended. So we would just feel much, much more comfortable. This kind of stuff is good to do. It needs to be done. Funding it out of penalty money, I think that sends a bad message. It makes people suspicious. It decreases the confidence people have in the agency. And in the end, this is a general fund problem. This is a problem all over Oregon, not just where someone happens to be caught with a burn barrel. And so with that, we would ask you to look at these amendments. I think this makes a lot of sense, and certainly we would support this being funded out of the general fund to a greater extent than they have proposed. We'd be fine with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Vakian, members of the committee. For the record, I am Harlan Levy, representing the Oregon Association of Realtors, and we too support this bill. We are here today, excuse me, because we support the concept of taking care of these non-certified wood stoves, and I appreciate the DEQ involving us from a very early point at writing some amendments to clarify that procedure. We're working with Mr. Ginsburg and other members of DEQ on those amendments, but in a nutshell, I'll be very brief because you've heard most of what I had planned on saying. We would like some more definitions in there so the process is a little more straightforward in the statute. We would also like it to be a statewide uniform process. Right now what we're seeing is local jurisdictions are passing their own ordinances and they're creating different requirements for the sale of properties that include wood stoves. We want it to be uniform. Real estate licensees have a license that allows them to practice real estate statewide, so we need it to be a uniform process, and we're going to work with DEQ on that as well. We're going to talk about putting some language into the seller's property disclosure form. Dealing with wood stoves, there existed a few questions in there previously. Those were removed a few years ago. We'd like to put those back in. And we really do support the idea of the grants program, assisting lower-income people in pulling these things out of their homes. So it's something that we do really support this. We think it's good legislation. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if Harlan would be the right person to answer this or not, but perhaps this question should be addressed straight to DEQ. But I think all of you received a letter, the same one that I did, dealing with central or wood stoves or solid fuel burning devices that are in central heating systems, and whether or not there would be an exemption for that, or in reality, there are not really any. I don't know any certified, wood stoves that are to be wood furnaces, not stoves, but furnaces. I don't know if that animal exists. And so, question.
I see heads nodding from the experts back there. Yeah. Mr. West and Kirkpatrick, so I suppose so.
Okay, but the issue of whether or not the stove or the furnace is installed in a central heating system versus a freestanding stove.
Chair Vakian, Senator Beyer, I don't know. That's not my area of expertise, so I'm sorry I can't answer that question.
Mr. Chairman, the houses, they don't build them.
I think the definitions generally need some work. I mean, I've had a lot of calls from members saying, would this affect my boiler, you know, industrial boiler? What if it's an exterior industrial boiler? I just think this was a really good start, though, but I think it just the definitions need some work.
Senator Bates?
Just on this comment, then I want to ask a question. I know of in the past, in the Portland area, it was very common to have furnaces that were fired by sawdust or pellets. And in the basement, and boom, away they went. And well, obviously, no pellets aren't a problem. But I think your point is well taken. The definition needs to be maybe worked on, and I'm sure you guys can do that. But, Mr. Chair, with your permission, Mr. Ledger, I have a question for you about your issue, okay? Because I share your concerns. I don't like bounty hunters, okay? I had an experience in Colorado one time when the state police there were funded solely by the fines they collected. Okay, and when you drove in from Kansas, it wasn't fun. Okay,
about here, Coburg.
It was something else. They actually had to change. It got to be so bad. So that kind of stuff can get out of hand. I may be wrong about this, but as I understand this, the fines are designed to go to low-income people to replace the stoves, not to fund the FTE or to fund the program. There is a bit of a difference there. If it was going for the FTEs or for the program oversight, I'd have the same exact issues you do. But if it's truly going just for low-income people for stoves, I think I can accept that possibly. What's your feeling about that?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Bates, I think from the public side, it's money going to the DEQ. And I think the issue that, well, it's in a dedicated account for this or that, it's still going to state government. It's still going to the DEQ. It would be like I assume you didn't get a ticket, but had you gotten a ticket.
No, actually, I got
and it. Would have
gotten, I got several.
And it would have gone into some well-deserving fund that's needed to do something to comply with the law. It's still, I think the issue is still there. I also think we're not talking about a huge amount of money here. We're talking about $300,000, and that money would go to the general fund anyway. And I think if it went to the general fund and came back out of the general fund, I think everyone would be pleased with it. Plus, you know, in the future, once you do that, you kind of lose control of it. And I'm a little concerned about a fund being funded by enforcement that essentially gets taken out of control of the legislature because it's you know, just appropriated. It's not like paying fees that go into account every year. And I can understand why they'd want it. We would just feel much more comfortable with it. Just, you know, going into the general fund can come back out, but then there's a break between something that an agency wants to do, albeit good, but it's part of an agency program, and enforcement paying for it. We just need a break, and we would be much, much more comfortable with that.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would just give you one word, and that's, and those of us in Ways and Means know the word well, the word is fungible. And if you've ever heard that around Ways and Means, you know what we're talking about. So we can move it back and forth.
I'm talking fungible.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you.
Sorry for the sidebar, folks. Okay, I think you two are done.
Thank you very much.
Is there anybody else that's come in that wants to testify on this wood stoves bill, Senate Bill 338? And no, then I'm going to close the public hearing on 338. This bill will be back again after we have a chance to put a little sharper pencil to it. And we are going to take a 5-minute recess. A couple members are going to have to leave, which is fine. But we'll need to be back in just 5 minutes for just one additional issue. If you need to go, go ahead.
For folks that are in the room, this is not the Measure 37 committee. We've just got one more matter in the Environment Natural Resources Committee that'll take about 2 minutes, so you don't have to leave or anything. So we're back from recess, and the issue before us is a letter from the Legislative Assembly that has the names and the signatures of the chairs of the House and Senate Environment Committees. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, and I need to open a work session regarding the letter. And the letter, which I will not read into the record, but in general is a letter to the Federal Environmental Protection Agency urging them to reduce the level of benzene in Oregon's gasoline. I suppose I should have a motion.
Need a motion?
Senator Bates.
I would motion we move the letter to the floor.
Actually, we don't even need to go to the floor.
We go directly?
We just need to approve it as going out from the committee, and we can do that by a consensus.
I would so move.
Thank you, Senator Bates. And is there any objection to the letter? Seeing none, the letter is approved, and the work session on the letter is closed, and the Environment Committee is adjourned.